You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Georgia, Alabama. And by the way, on a college campus, Georgia, Alabama. This game's not happening in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium or, you know, a national championship game. It's not a playoff game. Chip Towers, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He is a friend of the show and a terrific reporter. He wrote a piece today about Kalen DeBoer. And man, does he deep dive when he does this stuff. There are a lot of reporters, I think, that just kind of do the basic story. There's a boilerplate story. What I like about our guest coming up is when he attacks something, he makes the extra call, the extra three calls. He draws on years and decades of experience. He had a great piece today about Kalen DeBoer and how different the era is and the atmosphere is at Alabama now. Practice times have changed. Expectations have changed. The assistant coaches are available for interviews. Kalen DeBoer era at Alabama will be on display against Georgia this weekend. Chip Towers joining us now. Give us an idea, like when you're reporting that story and, you know, you're the Georgia guy, how much interest is there in what's going on at Alabama?
Well, you know, being the flagship paper of the South, as we like to still think of ourselves, though I don't know if we can call ourselves a newspaper anymore. We're certainly a .com like everybody else, but we do produce a printed newspaper every day. You know, Alabama, you know, just has a huge following in Atlanta. Atlanta is a real melting pot when it comes to alumni bases. I mean, you know, you got Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, Clemson, Florida, Florida State, you know, all surrounding in Atlanta being kind of the primary booming metropolis, you know, centrally located to all of that. That's where a lot of alumni ends up. So, in particular, though, you know, with the University of Georgia, you know, Alabama's kind of become the rival, right? You were just talking about, you know, hey, this is pretty cool. They're not playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I mean, usually when they play, they're playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium or in Indianapolis or something, at Lucas Oil Stadium. That's been the venue most of the time. This is a regular old regular season game and one of several challenging ones for Georgia. It's interesting, you know, obviously you got SEC expansion and conference expansion and realignment all over the place. And in the latest reshuffle, Georgia's having to go back to Tuscaloosa, which Georgia kind of bristled at a little bit. What can you do about schedules? But it was like, hey, we were just there. They went there in 2020, which wasn't originally on the schedule for the shortened COVID year. And then now they got to turn around and go back. And as you've probably noticed, you know, not only does Georgia go to Tuscaloosa this season, they also go to Texas and they also go, to Ole Miss and they have Tennessee back home. So right there, I believe is four of the top six. So it's a big schedule and this is a big game. And, I guess in the era of the 12-team playoff, it doesn't feel quite like a playoff game, though. I don't know. I mean, you know, the winner and loser of this game, there could be lasting repercussions. We'll see.
Help me with the lasting repercussions, because, you know, I kept trying to think who has more pressure here. Is it the Georgia team that has just, you know, a really difficult schedule, or is it the Alabama team that kind of needs to prove that it's not going to lose a step with a new head coach? What are those repercussions in your mind, and who has the pressure in this game?
Well, it certainly feels like Georgia to me, and it might just be that that's the, you know, kind of the side of the equation that I cover. But look, you know, I mean, the narrative when Nick Saban retired in January was that, oh, well, now the GOAT has moved, and so that just kicks the door wide open for Kirby Smart, who, by the way, has won 42 consecutive regular season games. I mean, think about that for a minute. Georgia has lost two games in their last 51 under Kirby Smart. Both of those were to Alabama and to Nick Saban. So Nick Saban not being there, the thought was, okay, now the door's kicked open and Georgia can become Alabama and Kirby Smart can become Nick Saban. So that's where I feel like the pressure is. But for me, it goes deeper than that, right? Because now, okay, you got the goat out of the way. You know, now you don't take care of the guy who comes in from Washington, who's not familiar with this area and the ways and means of the big old bad SEC. I think there could be sort of perception repercussions that, but bigger than that, really. And John, you know this. The thing I've always loved about college football more than anything else, it's such a momentous sport. I mean, momentum is such a big part of it. And so I just feel like, you know, Georgia didn't play well at Kentucky. I think they were probably looking ahead and they just didn't play. You know, you're going to have a stinker every season. And maybe that was Georgia's. And then you go in there and if you fall, and especially if you fall hard, who knows? Still earlier in the year, you know, rankings don't mean anything. And Georgia's a slight favorite, but you truly, none of us really know what to expect. But, you know, say that happens, you go in there and you drop it and drop it good. In Tuscaloosa, well, you got to turn around in a couple of weeks here and you got to go to Texas. Well, all that confidence, you know, all the doubt starts to creep in and all that kind of stuff. Texas is going to be fired up. You know, we're out spending on NIL. We have Manning as a backup quarterback. You drop another one over there. All of a sudden, you know, I mean, you got that rope is hard to hang on to. Ask the University of Florida, you know, ask Southern Cal, right? I mean, it's, You got to hold on to that rope, and if you let go, there's no guarantee you'll get it back.
Chip Towers, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with us. You wrote a piece about Kalen DeBoer today, and you point out some of the differences with Nick Saban. With, you know, practice times are different. Saban liked the afternoon, DeBoer liked the morning. The availability of freshman players, DeBoer is fine with it. He seems a little more comfortable with his assistant coaches talking as well. But you have this great anecdote about the bells that players heard in the distance at practice. Can you share that with us and, you know, how you kind of came upon that? I mean, it's just such a telling thing because Nick Saban, no way is this happening.
Oh, yeah, no way that would have ever happened. And, you know, I mean, really, I was just scrambling around looking for stuff. And I think it might have been John Zehner. From the Associated Press. He was one of the calls I made on a guy I've known for a while. And, you know, hey, just tell me how it's different, you know. And he just casually mentioned that, there was that time in the summer you brought an ice cream truck out to practice. And this is on August 8th, I think it was, you know, like a week into camp. So, you know, the first day of full pads. And so he wanted to reward the team. So he had an ice cream truck come out to the practice field, and I, you know, that, and so I go back and look it up, and sure enough, I don't know how I missed it. I'm sure I was just in camp mode at Georgia. I didn't even notice it back then, but I mean, it was headlines, you know, border to border in the state of Alabama, you know, that ice cream truck came out. And that was a pretty good indication that times are different. But, you know, as I got deeper into it, and, you know, I've interviewed, Kalen a couple of times this week, you know, he truly is. He does. He just has a calm demeanor. And the other thing, all the writers that I talked to over there about, you know, I have to deal with it here with Kirby all the time. And I don't know where this, you know, Bill Belichick playbook came from, that you've got to go to a press conference and you just got to be the biggest sourpuss you can possibly be, right? You just got, you know, I'm just going to sit here and just insult everybody all day and act like I'm smarter than everybody else. But that's not the way Kalen DeBoer handles himself. And I also touched on in the story that he gets asked all the time, what about his relationship with Saban? What's it like following a legend? Do you talk to Saban? All that stuff. And every time he's answered that question, which he's fielded several times again this week, he answers it like he's never heard it before, you know, and he might chuckle a little bit or smile, you know, and geez, that's refreshing for those of us who are kind of coming out of this, you know, who have to cover a branch of the Saban tree. I'll just put it that way.
Chip, you know, the things Georgia needs to do well in this game to win, what's at the top of the list?
Well, you know, see, that's what it comes down to, right? At the end of the day, all this stuff is superfluous junk. At the end of the day, it's blocking, tackling, protecting your quarterback, making plays, and not turning the ball over. And, you know, I do think Georgia is well-tuned for that. I think kind of – so, you know, early on, especially with these polls, and the reason Georgia is two now instead of one, where they've been for the longest haul, the last 2 years in the AP poll, is the beauty contest, right? They didn't look very good at Kentucky, and I was there. I mean, they definitely didn't. They didn't play well. They win 13-12 in kind of an inexplicable game. You know, you didn't really see that coming from Kentucky. But as you get closer to this game and you look at it, and it was actually Kalen Boer who pointed this out. Somebody asked him, like, you know, kind of what are the glaring stats that sort of poke at you this game that, you know, that it could be. And the thing he ran over was not Alabama's stats. It was, we need to take care of the football. Georgia hasn't turned over the football all year. We need to get in the end zone. Georgia has not given up a touchdown all year. Somebody brought something up, and the same thing about punt returner. Apparently they've had issues and sort of things about the punt returner. And he said, Georgia, it doesn't matter. And this is true. No one has returned a punt on Georgia in the last 2 years. Yeah, you know, so it's like it's those kind of things that when you get together in, you know, another game of the century, right? There's an annual yearly game of the century or two. It seems like this is the one for this year. Those are big things. Georgia doesn't turn the ball over. They have not given up a touchdown. They don't give up punt returns. They, you know, and so on and so on. Now, they haven't looked good. You know, Carson Beck does not look nearly as good is Jalen Milroe to me. So it's, you know, a lot of that's going to come down to it. And by the way, John, you know, your listeners need to know you're one of the people that I reached out to about this story. You know, Kalen DeBoer is good or better than anybody, certainly better than most people in these parts. And, you know, one of my main points of that whole story was not just saying that Nick Saban, that this guy's different than Nick Saban. It was saying this guy is alike to Nick Saban in the fact that, man, he's good. I mean, look at his record. It's just dumbfounding when you start to look at it closely. It's like, what? This guy's lost 12 games in his career as a head coach. So, you know, this is his big test too. And that's, you know, and he wants to look good in this game, and he wants to show that's why he came to the SEC. You know, no disrespect to the Pac-12 at all. But, you know, he wanted to come where game day is going to be there and every seat's going to be sold out and there's going to be 103,000 people, you know, in the stadium. That's, you know, he wanted this. And, well, you know, as they say in the old movie, well, he gets it. So we'll see.
Kalen DeBoer, record 107-12 as a head coach, including his stints at Fresno State and Sioux Falls. Kirby Smart, when you ask Kirby Smart about Kalen DeBoer, you know, Kirby Smart's busy. He's winning national championships. I don't know how much rubbernecking he was doing. How much did he know about Kalen DeBoer before he got to Alabama?
Well, I did ask him about that specifically. And you know, people in these parts, as we like to say, didn't know much about Kalen DeBoer, but Kirby Smart did because of Dan Lanning. You know, as you know, I mean, Dan Lanning and Kirby are really close. So when Dan went out to Oregon, obviously now he's following Oregon and actually, you know, playing on the West Coast like most of those games are, that's very conducive to an SEC schedule. So Kirby, you know, often was able to sit up on Saturday night and catch Oregon games, or certainly, you know, look at coaches' copies and stuff like that. And, you know, he talked to Dan for this game, but I mean, he even alluded to it. This was part of the thing that I asked you about, was because you went to those games and watched those games. Like, hey, this guy's 3-0 against Dan Lanning. And Kirby joked that, you know, when somebody asked him if he'd consulted Dan Lanning, he said, well, yeah, I have. But, you know, I mean, he didn't have much to say about it because he went 0-3 against him. And so, you know, it's a lot more complicated than that, as you know. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, he's played and coached in big games. And, you know, the other part of this is the Jalen Milroe. I mean, you talk about, you know, coaching Michael Penix and then, you know, leaving him, he goes to the NFL and you come down here and he, you know, it's Michael Penix the second here in Jalen Milroe, maybe a little bigger, stronger arm, better runner version of Michael Penix here. So that's been a good fit as well. And that's going to be interesting to watch on Saturday as to what level Jalen Milroe is kind of adopted to DeBoer's system and kind of the marriage of the two systems that I think he's done a good job of not just said, all right, we're changing everything. He's kept a lot of stuff the same, but what's that? This is going to be the first time we really see a test against a defensive genius like Kirby Smart when these guys match wits on Saturday.
You know, what's interesting is I think Georgia's getting Alabama. You know, if I know Kalen DeBoer at all, I know that his team will get better as the season goes. And I think if I'm Georgia, I actually prefer to play him right now and get this first meeting versus maybe a month from now, you know, and get that first meeting and get that confidence builder that you're talking about. Who do you like in the game? And by the way, you know, Chip, you've won a lot. You've been writing a lot of game stories, win, win, win. I was looking back at the last 3 or 4 years. How many games has Georgia? Is it like 49 out of 51? Like, what is that number? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. They're 49-2 with both losses to Alabama in the SEC championship game. None of those are regular season games. So, in fact, of course, this is great trivia. The last time Georgia lost a regular season game was in 2020 on the road to Alabama, and that was with a first time starter named Stetson Bennett. So that was that's kind of interesting. You know, things kind of changed after that. But I don't know who I like in this game. I've really been watching the betting line mm-hmm. mostly, and it stayed. I thought for sure it would plummet, and I'm still not sure that it won't swing all the way over to Alabama side. Because if you look at the analysis of this game, and wait, I mean, between SEC Network and ESPN and Fox and CBS and everybody's weighing in on it this week. I mean, it sounds like Georgia doesn't have a chance, you know. Here's the thing that really you alluded to this, and Kalen DeBoer alluded to this. You know, he's never coached an SEC game. And just that thing that happened in Kentucky a couple of weeks ago is a perfect example. When you take on another fully invested SEC team, that is a bludgeoning, bruising process. And Georgia's been through that so far. Alabama hasn't been through that yet. No disrespect to Wisconsin, but that's not your daddy's Wisconsin. Not right now. I mean, it's going to take a minute for them to get that back on track, I think. And that was an impressive win up there, but there's also the how involved in it. And if you look at it, they haven't had to grind a whole lot out. They haven't had there's not been a lot of slobber knocking going on, let's put it that way, for Alabama. It's been a lot of preening and running and, you know, dialing and profiling. You know, that's not what this is going to be. There's going to be fingernails pulled off in this game. How they react to that is going to be really intriguing to me. That's that, you know, when you get busted in the mouth, how do you react? That's what I'm eager to see.
All right, we've got a diehard Georgia fan who calls into the show frequently. Roy in Portland has a question for you. Roy, you're on with Chip Towers. You get your dream. You get to ask him a Georgia question.
Hey, Chip, how you doing today?
Hey, Roy in Portland, man, that's awesome. Dog fans are everywhere, though. I have learned that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Chip, I want to ask you about Georgia plays. We play the number 4 team, the number 5 team, the number 6 team, and the number 1 team. So, you know, how do you feel about the preseason rankings? Because Oregon, for example, and Ohio State, to me, don't play anybody. I mean, Ohio State hasn't played anybody the whole, the whole season so far. And Oregon, you know, they play Ohio State coming up and then Michigan, but that's nowhere compared to what Georgia has to go through. So if we lose a game, how do you feel about us still making, or maybe even two, still making the playoff?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good question. So, you know, I'm going to skip to this part of it first, and then I'll come back to the first part of your question. You know, I don't think a three-loss Georgia team makes it, okay? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first one. Right? I think a two-loss Georgia team, if they lose on the road to Alabama and Texas, you know, the committee, the way this works and everything, the way they got screwed last year, that's kind of what this is all about. You know, I think they do get in. But, you know, there's a lot of other places where you can have a hiccup. And now it's funny you should mention that about Oregon. And you can extrapolate this out on a lot of, you know, right now everybody's just waving the flag of the Tennessee Vols. You know, let's wave that flag. And, you know, they went and they did a good job at Oklahoma. Again, that's not your daddy's Oklahoma right now. It's not. It's just not. I mean, I've seen it up close and personal, and a good win, and it proved something. But, you know, 76-0 over Kent State and whatever their other whitewash game was, you know, I don't move. I am an AP voter, and that doesn't move me. Conversely, teams can't control their schedule, right? I mean, generally they can't. Mostly, you know, the conference did this to Georgia. Georgia didn't do this to Georgia, this schedule, right? And so, but I also don't generally over penalize teams in the poll about that kind of stuff. And this is where, so I say this to say this. Where it comes to Oregon specifically, I have them higher than everybody else in the AP poll. I think I might have them fifth or sixth. Why? Because that's where they started. I mean, they haven't done anything. I put heavy weight on wins and losses. Ask Notre Dame, which is no longer in my poll, you know, because they lost at home to Northern Illinois. But, you know, but the converse of that is I haven't dropped Oregon. They have not looked good. I've seen what they did. I review it every week. I haven't necessarily watched them live very much. But I've kept them where they are because the games will come eventually. But you're never going to have an even scheduling model. This is not the NFL. You know, you're not going to take the best teams and give them the hardest schedules the next year. That's just not how it works. So there's not a whole lot you can do about it. So I don't overvalue it. I just kind of go on what I'm seeing in rosters and my own preseason analysis, and I kind of work off that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as Oregon keeps winning, I'm going to keep them around where I have them because I believe in the team and the coach. But, you know, as soon as they go by the wayside, especially with that schedule, you know, you'll see them plummet. That's what they'll see.
So, Roy, you've got two losses to give. You know, you have anything else for Chip before I cut him loose?
Chip, I wanted to also ask you about Kirby talked about this whole situation with UNLV with the quarterback. And Kirby basically said about this is what we got coming. He said he was saying, you know, you're going to get players that get paid by other schools and quit. And he said until it's like a contract or something, then expect more of this.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed. You know, word travels fast because he just said that this afternoon. So I'm impressed, Roy, with your ability to follow your team.
Roy's all over it. Trust me. Trust me. Roy, he might as well be working on the show.
I mean, I haven't even done my story on that. Like, that came out today, and I'm like, oh, well, that's it. I need to write a story on that. But everything is instantaneous nowadays, and Roy in Portland already knows this. But, you know, he's right. And I really feel bad for college football. You know, look, I fall on the wayside, the side of, you know, players deserve to be compensated for their quote unquote name, image, and likeness. But what's going on with the collectives is that that's not at all what it was designed to be. And it's kind of ridiculous. So, you know, the UNLV quarterback, right now, nobody can prove what he was offered. And that's the problem. And that's where we're going in Power Four. And that's what Kirby's alluding to. That's what's going to happen. You're going to end up with a salary cap here, and everybody's going to have to be transparent, and they're going to have contracts eventually. Unless it somehow can be legislated back into a true name, image, and likeness. For instance, so Carson Beck here is a redshirt senior quarterback starter on what was the nation's number one team, winningest team of the last 4 years. He famously drives a Lamborghini now. I'm okay with that, right?
Because
he earned that. He earned that through his play and everything else. But, you know, whether it's this kid at UNLV transferring there for $100,000 is what we're hearing, or it's Arch Manning going to Texas for $5 million. That's not what it was meant to do. That is pay for play. That is luring you here. Now, my vision on that down the road is, you know, it comes from ambitious, rich alumni, right? But these people don't become rich alumni by being stupid. So it's only going to take a few of these kind of deals for a $5 million quarterback to show up somewhere and be a total bust. They're not going to give those kind of deals anymore. And the silliness will be over. Yeah.
Chip, we got to run. I appreciate you joining us, man. Great stuff. Highly entertaining. Thank you, Roy, for the questions. Good luck with you this weekend. You should be driving a Lamborghini, Chip Towers. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you very much.
Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's fantastic. There's our friend Chip Towers. Leave it here.